Boland, and we hear first from Mr. Riddle.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. My name is Guy Riddle, and my partner and I represent Janice Brown individually and is representative of the estate of Jason Brown and Billy Ray Brown. I am going to be speaking first on the issue or the appeal that deals with Dr. Boland, and my partner will be dealing with the appeal as it deals with the Wichita County. Essentially, this is a claim under 42 U.S.C. Section 1983 for violations of Jason Brown's constitutional rights while he was a pretrial detainee in Wichita County. On July 22, 2004, he was arrested, and he was booked in to the Wichita County Jail.
Mr. Riddle, I think we know pretty well the facts and everything. I mean, I'm just speaking for myself, but if you'd spend your time on your legal arguments, it might be more effective.
Yes, Your Honor. I will move on to the legal arguments. The claims that the Browns are bringing, or the appellants are bringing against Wichita County and Dr. Boland, but specifically Dr. Boland, is that he implemented unconstitutional policies and procedures with regard to the running of the jail. This resulted in the death of Jason Brown. Namely, what Dr. Boland, he was assigned and he was delegated the rights to operate this jail, and what he did is he created a standing order, which was unlawful. And in this case, there has never been anybody that's ever controverted the fact that the standing order is requiring licensed vocational nurses to act as on-call nurses, to prescribe medication, which is against Texas law, to basically diagnose, which they are not allowed to do. So when inmates such as Mr. Brown comes in, LVNs are actually assessing, diagnosing, and then prescribing violations. That's in violation of the Nurse Practices Act as well as Texas law for prescribing medications. That's what happened in this case. Jason Brown came in. He had a history of major problems. He had esophageal varices. He had hepatitis. He walked in the door. He explained his issues, told him the medications he was on, that he had thrown up some blood, and then the next thing, you know, he gets taken to the detention center, and he throws up a foot and a half by 2.5 feet of blood approximately 31 hours later. A big puddle of blood. And what happened is the LVN who handled the matter looked at the standing orders and prescribed him an antacid. The next thing that she did, when he's still begging for help and complaining and asking for help, and actually it wasn't the guards that were helping him, it was the inmates, finally said, please help this guy. And he is sitting there bleeding out, and he finally gets the guards to come in, and they look at him, and they realize he's not coherent. He's still having problems, so they call the nurse up, and the nurse at this point gives a Phenergan suppository. The bottom line to the argument is if you have medical care and it's unlawful, and these LVNs are performing functions that Dr. Boland should have never had them doing, it's unconstitutional for providing that care. And what they've done is in addition to that care that was provided, there were also other unconstitutional policies and procedures put in place by Dr. Boland. Dr. Boland had an awful attitude and an awful temper with these nurses, and these nurses feared him. And they didn't like sending people to the hospital because they would get chastised. There's two affidavits that have been filed in this court. And one of the things that's most telling about this case is the LVN that did not send Jason Brown to the emergency room. The night before she left, while she was enjoying a cigarette, she said, can you imagine the ass chewing I'd get from Dr. Boland if I sent this kid to the emergency room in the good condition he's in?
She said he was in good health. That was the quote, wasn't it?
Well, Your Honor, I either look at it as one of two ways. She is either really, truly so inadequately trained she should not be providing medical care or even helping a doctor. Or she is truly a facetious person. Anyone that throws up 1 by 1.5 foot by 2 to 2.5 foot of blood cannot arguably be said to be in good hands or in good care or in good shape.
How long has she been working at the jail?
Your Honor, I'm not exactly sure the exact amount of time, but it wasn't her first day, and she had been there quite a while. I do not know the exact time period, but The issue in this case, the most important thing is if you have a pretrial detainee, one, they've never been convicted of anything, but they're entitled to medical care. Not medical care from somebody that the state will not allow you to give the kind of medical care. And this isn't just the thing that's important about this case. This isn't just administering medicine after Dr. Bolin had seen them. This is a standing order. Dr. Bolin's never seen these people, never saw Jason Brown. And that's his big argument in this case. I never saw Jason Brown. It's not my fault. But the point of the matter is, he wrote the standing order that gave the LVN the power that she should have never had. It wasn't just in violation of prescription medication laws. It was in violation of the Texas Nurse Practices Act. If she wasn't the on-call nurse, which she was not supposed to be.
You're arguing for strict liability, I guess, aren't you?
No, Your Honor. I'm arguing that you cannot create an unconstitutional law because you're not providing medical care at all.
You still have to show cause and effect. I mean, if you look at what the first panel in this case said, they said there was no evidence that the doctor's attitude or his gruffness or his reluctance to have help given to the pretrial detainees ever dissuaded a nurse from sending an inmate to the hospital who needed it.
And Your Honor, I respectfully disagree with the first hearing of this matter when they talked about the two nurses that wrote affidavits, and they said, boy, we were fearful of them, but we ended up sending someone to the hospital. And they did say that in their affidavits, and they did make that point. And the court concluded that, well, since they went ahead and overrode Dr. Bolin's instructions not to send him to the hospital, that must mean there's no intimidation.
Well, you do understand that we're absolutely bound by that panel decision.
And I understand that, Your Honor. But and then on that case, I want to get back to the illegal standing orders and requiring these nurses to perform jobs they were not allowed to perform under Texas law. And the fact that the court, even this court in the first case, they looked at it and said, well, there's no prior incidences that would have put anybody on notice that these were a bad policy. Your Honor, I believe that the case law that does exist does spell out that you can have a single incident of unconstitutional activity that's sufficient to impose municipal liability if proof of the incident includes proof that it was caused by an existing unconstitutional policy. We've never heard one time from anybody on the other side that's ever said that these standing orders were legal or having LVNs perform the services they were performing or trying to perform were legal. They are not. And the fact that two other folks died within a relatively, or one died within 4 months and one was seriously injured within the next three years, shows a conscious indifference by the jail and everyone else and Dr. Bolin involved.
Okay, Mr. Anderson.
Yes, Your Honor. May it please the court. I have 7 minutes, so I will try to be brief. And I want to address the responsibility of Wichita County in this matter. In order for Wichita County to be held liable for the acts of Dr. Bolin, there's a three-pronged test. First, we must have a policy maker, Dr. Bolin. Two, we must have an unconstitutional policy that shows deliberate conscious indifference. And three, that policy must be the moving force in the injury that's complained about. Let's first, in turn, take the policymaker. Here we have an opinion already in this case that Sheriff Callahan is not liable for the acts of Dr. Bolin. And Wichita County, through Sheriff Callahan, is not liable for the provision of the medical care that Dr. Bolin was contracted to do. So the only answer as to do we have someone who makes policy here is that, yes, it is Dr. Bolin. And that's supported by the facts in the record. The contract that he has with Wichita County requires him to implement standing orders, requires him to supervise the nurses, and requires them to assist the inmates once they're transferred out for emergency procedures. It is all throughout the record, it is clear that Dr. Bolin is the person who is to supervise the nurses in all of their professional activities. Now, there is a health services plan that was written by Sheriff Callahan, and the county has tried to hide behind that and say, look, he's the policymaker now, and we can't be respondeat superior for Dr. Bolin. Well, the policy that Sheriff Callahan wrote up, no one had ever seen, not the nurses or Dr. Boland. And the provision of authority and the delegation of policymaking authority was given under the contract to Dr. Boland. In doing, in fulfilling exactly what he had been given to do in developing this policy, he came up with the standing orders that required the LVNs to assess patients in violation of the Nurse Practices Act and prescribe medication in violation of the Nurse Practices Act. And I think the only reason we're talking about this particular policy is because it was this unauthorized delegation of medical care was given to an LVN. If it was given to a janitor, they'd have to run from this, and Wichita County would say, yes, this was clearly unconstitutional. And clearly, the government of the state of Texas, with the input of the Texas Medical Board, came up with the sound and reasoned policy that LVNs are not licensed to and not trained to prescribe medication. Contrary directly to the law of the state of Texas, the same state that requires Wichita County to provide medical care for its inmates, Dr. Boland enacted an unconstitutional policy. And whether it's viewed as a condition of confinement or whether it's viewed as an episodic incident, either way, it's an illegal act and an unconstitutional act.
How is that related to this death?
Because her following the policy clearly resulted in his death. And here's how it happened. He came in, he's complaining of symptoms. He's now bleeding out on the floor. If he continues to do that, well, then we might have to send him to the hospital and against Dr. Boland's wishes. So we'll pop a Finnegan's suppository in him, which is a prescription medication that she could not do anywhere else in the state of Texas except for the Wichita County Jail, mask his symptoms, and dump him in a room. So we'll hear no more from this man.
I would think not sending him to the hospital would be the cause of his death, not giving him the suppository.
Now, that's a good question. And here's the answer to that question. The unlawful prescription of medication made it so that no one else working that night and Nurse Cratcha wouldn't be forced to reassess his condition because you'd hear no more from him. Giving him the medication in against the policy is what killed him, because from that point forward, you heard no more from him. And let me address some issues with these three more incidents, the Henson incident and the Bowden incident. Wichita County says that it's okay that this standing policy was in effect because we never had any problems with it before. I think that's a direct quote from their brief. If this policy had gone on for 5 years and the policy was stated differently in a hypothetical, every inmate who complains is to be given a Finnegan suppository. And for 5 years, nothing happened bad. But on the first day, that person happened to be allergic to that medicine and died, we'd clearly be in a different situation. And they would be liable for that right off the bat because that policy was unconstitutional and required an LVN to administer medicine. And that's what we've got here. We've got an LVN who's, one, intimidated by the sheriff, and two, who prescribes the exact wrong medicine to the person when he needs to go to the hospital. So clearly we have a policymaker, and clearly we have a policy, and we've already taken several steps into how it was the moving force behind the death of Jason Brown. And clearly here we have a situation where the exact policy put into place by Dr. Boland at the direction of Wichita County, when put into place, not only killed Mr. Brown, but Mr. Henson, and injured Ms. Bowden. Clearly, Your Honor, we have, whether it be episodic incident or condition of confinement, a clear violation of this plaintiff's civil rights. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Anderson. And now, Mr. Walsh.
May it please the court, when Mr. Brown was incarcerated in the Wichita County Jail, the jail medical system had at least apparently worked quite well for the 9 or 10 years that it had been in existence. There are no similar events reported in the record, and I will confess that I came on as an appellate lawyer, not as a trial lawyer, so I'm stuck to the record just like you are, and nothing, at least before this incident, exists to show any sort of similar event where there had been a problem with the standing orders, where there had been a problem with somebody not calling the doctor or not getting medical care due to the alleged intimidation, or even some evidence of a lack of need for future training. In addition, the jail repeatedly passed state certification, which the state certifiers come in and look at what medical care is being provided, can see the standing orders, can see the LVN care. It's apparently enough for to pass state certification. So when we get to the qualified immunity, we have to remember that it's the plaintiff's burden of proof to prove that we were deliberately indifferent to their harm. And as this court said in Brown, deliberate indifference is actual knowledge of the facts showing that a risk of harm existed and that the official actually drew that inference.
And I don't want to interrupt your train of thought on deliberate indifference, but let's go back a minute to the standing orders. Do you take the position that there was nothing in those standing orders that was contrary to state law or to professional norms in terms of how much can be delegated from a doctor to a nurse?
No, and here's the reason why. And as I was getting ready over the weekend, I was like, I know in every medical malpractice case I see in an ER, there's a standing protocol when you come in with chest pain, you get an EKG, a chest X-ray, nitroglycerin, and oxygen. Why? Well, because there's a standing order that tells them to do that. And so I went and looked in the Medical Practice Act, which is in the Occupations Code 157. It gives the physician the ability to delegate to anyone he thinks is capable of carrying out his order. And in 157.002E, it includes the ability to administer medication. E, the administration or provision of drugs may be delegated through physician order, a standing medical order, a standing delegation order, or another order defined by the board. Now, while it may be that there's a little too much assessment going on, or maybe the medication dosages shouldn't be something that an LVN in particular gives, what tells Dr. Bolin when he looks up the Medical Practice Act about what he can do that anything is wrong with that? Nothing. And that's back to just because it may be illegal doesn't mean that it's unconstitutional. We can start with one premise. We know that deliberate indifference does not include merely negligence or gross negligence. We know that because the case law tells us that. And then when we look at the Medical Practices Act again or the Nurse Practice Act, it is illegal to have unprofessional conduct. Well, what is the unprofessional conduct? That's breaching the reasonable standard of care, negligence. If you're negligent and violate the Medical Practice Act or the Nurse Practice Act, would you have a constitutional violation? No. And that's why we know that merely being illegal doesn't arise to being unconstitutional.
Let me tell you what concerns me.
Sure.
Nurse Kravitz, or what's her name?
Kratchka, I believe.
Yeah, I mean, her conduct was, in my mind, clearly unconstitutional in failing to adequately treat this inmate, or this, I guess he's a pretrial detainee. Do you agree with that?
Well, I can at least envision a scenario in her mind where somebody may think what she did was reasonable, because I know, and I put it in my brief, there's a difference between throwing up bright red blood and throwing up coffee ground vomit, as it's described by her.
Given the quantity of blood and multiple times, seems to me there's clearly a fact issue there. And then the question becomes whether the evidence that indicates Dr. Bolin intimidated the nurses to prevent them from sending patients to the hospital or calling him raises a question of whether he unconstitutionally failed to supervise those nurses who were that was his one of his duties. So talk to me about that.
Sure. And nurse intimidation was where I was going to go next. The issue with nurse intimidation is, I think it is, as Judge Smith pointed out, a little bit of an overclaim to say that she didn't call because of a fear of Dr. Bolin. She called because she assessed him in being good health. Whether rightly or wrongly, that may be due to the fact that it's now coffee ground emesis, which means it's not active bleeding. She could think in her mind the bleeding has stopped.
Well, she could, but we're talking about questions of fact.
Sure. And that's a question of fact for her. My point is, the issue with her, though, is she makes the assessment that he's in good health. That's the reason she's not calling, because she thinks he's healthy, not because she thinks he needs to go to the hospital.
Well, I mean, that's her argument, maybe, but we've got a question of fact on that.
But as to Dr. Bolin, even her testimony is Dr. Bolin asks me when I call him what I consider appropriate questions. I'm not intimidated by Dr. Bolin. He asks me the right appropriate questions to figure out what to do with the patient. I send patients to the ER. Dr. Bolin sends patients to the ER when I call. So at least with regard to this nurse, we have no evidence that she was ever intimidated by Dr. Bolin.
Except she made that comment.
Sure.
But doesn't that belie her later testimony?
And that gets back to just being a jerk does not make one unconstitutional in being a jerk. We've all dealt with people before that are difficult to deal with, but that does not mean that it rises to the point where Dr. Bolin would be aware that it's risking a patient not going to the ER when they need to, a nurse not calling them, or patient not getting medical care. All he's been told is, hey, buddy, sweeten up. Well, it doesn't mean that people aren't calling him, and in fact, the evidence shows that they are calling him. They are willing to overrule him.
Don't you have affidavits from other former nurses that say that he was intimidating and keeping them from calling him and sending patients to the hospital?
Actually, the affidavits don't say, I didn't call him. They said, I was afraid to call him, not that I didn't call him. The affidavits say, I think other nurses dreaded calling him, or they told me they dreaded calling him, not that they didn't call him. In a jail population of 450 to 500 people over a series of 9 years, if this is really a problem with nurses not calling him because of this fear, you would expect this to pop up on more than one occasion. And the events that occurred after this shouldn't count, because we're not aware before now that being a jerk is causing a problem with jail medical care, which is back to the deliberate indifference standard.
Well, I mean, you can have happenstance that would. How long had he been in charge of the nurses here?
I think about 9 years.
And how long have these nurses been there?
I don't know the exact answer. I know that Nurse Kretschka has not been there. I don't think she's been there the entire 9 years, but I think it's more like she's been there 4 or 5 years.
Back to the affidavits of the other nurses.
One nurse is from 4 to 5 years before this event, and one nurse is kind of confusing. She says, I worked at the jail from 2001 to 2004, but I quit in 2001 to take care of my family. So it's hard to tell. One is maybe as recent as a year before. The other is 4 to 5 years before.
Let me ask you this. If under the evidence, a reasonable jury could find that Dr. Bolin intimidated these nurses against sending patients to the hospital. Would that be enough to go for the case to go against the jury as to him?
Well, maybe on a medical malpractice theory, but not on a civil rights liability. Civil rights is predicated on the deliberate indifference standard, that he is aware that he's creating a risk of a problem. He has no idea, because there's never been a failure in the medical system, and more importantly, nobody's ever said to him, hey, nurses aren't calling because they're afraid of your gruff demeanor.
So you've got to have a death before you can have a case.
I'm not saying it has to be a death, but that's the whole point of civil rights deliberate indifference, is that it creates the ability for you to correct the situation, and then you refuse to do that. There's never been evidence of a situation that needs correcting. The only case examples of cases where it's unconstitutional from the get-go is where the policy itself is unconstitutional. Take the Tuttle case. It discriminated against pregnant women on its face. Therefore, enacting the policy, you only need one case. All the other examples of policies that I'm aware of involve a pattern of practice before you say the policy is deliberate indifference. Take the Dallas County Jail examples with episodic occurrences. One involves a 100 to 200 time rate of infection in the jail than any other jail. And the other Dallas County case involves the pharmacist saying that 40% of the inmates aren't getting their medications, systemic problems that they're aware of by being ratted out by federal reports, state reports, et cetera, to tell them to fix the problem. None of that exists here. The system had worked well until, unfortunately, Jason Brown's death. And that's why it's not deliberate indifference from
Dr. Well, of course, those nurses who signed the affidavit from two or three years before didn't think it was working too well.
Well, but did they say, I told Dr. Bolin that this was a problem? No, the affidavits don't go that far. They talk about their own personal fears. In fact, they didn't write them out to the medical board. They didn't write them out to the nursing board, which would seem to violate their own duties. And before I cut into my opponent's time, unless you have more questions.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Wong. Mr. Davis.
Thank you, Your Honor. The appellants in this case seem to draw some distinction between episodic acts and conditions of confinement, and I'd like to address those by the standards together, and I rely on Duval versus Dallas County, a very well-reasoned case by Judge Dennis and Judge Davis, which held that the two standards are functionally equivalent. In this particular case, there are some findings that pre-exist this panel's consideration, specifically that the sheriff was a policymaker in this instance. Two, that the medical care provided was within constitutional standards, specifically that the jail's formal medical plan complied with the state standards, and that the Browns had offered no evidence whatsoever that any detainee before Jason Brown experienced allegedly substandard medical care or was denied any constitutional rights relating to medical care. In fact, Your Honor, Dr. Boland had been there 10 years. Nurse Craven had been there 6 years. And in that period of time, no prior problems were noted whatsoever. No prior inmate claims or suits. No medical board complaints. No nursing board complaints. No complaints to the Texas Jail Standards Commission. No complaints to the U.S. Department of Justice Civil Rights Division. Absolutely no evidence of the required showing in either a conditions case or in a episodic act case, Your Honor. No evidence of any previous conduct or acts or omissions that would put the policymaker, the sheriff, on notice in this case. Absolutely nothing, Your Honor. And that's the most critical feature where this entire case that they have brought fails. Although I would like to note a couple of other things, Your Honor. The standing orders that the doctor had initiated were, as noted by the plaintiffs, initiated for minor complaints or routine continuing treatments that may be rendered as quickly as possible. Life-threatening situations, serious situations, are governed by the medical care plan prepared by the policymaker himself, the sheriff in this case. And that medical plan specifically states that if there is an emergency situation, or if you even believe there may be an emergency situation, transport that inmate to the hospital immediately. Don't guess about it. Don't second guess yourself. Take them immediately. It's interesting, Your Honor, because the court had referred to two affidavits signed by two previous nurses. And as the first Brown panel found, those two affidavits actually state that while Dr. Boland may have been unpleasant and intimidating, that in that situation, when the two nurses were confronted with a situation where the doctor said, no, they don't need to go to the hospital, both nurses sent them to the hospital. And the uncontested testimony of the sheriff is specifically that he told every nurse up there, okay, Dr. Boland is unpleasant to deal with, but if you think there's a problem, you send an inmate to the hospital immediately. I'll handle Dr. Boland. And he told Dr. Boland to be nicer, to stop being so grumpy, which was basically the complaint that he had had. Additionally, Your Honor, the Nurse Practices Act, I think I mentioned to you, there's nothing in that act that keeps a doctor from issuing standing orders to give people antacid tablets or to give them a fenugreek suppository, which relieves nausea. Those things can be given for standard routine situations. Anything else, if the doctor isn't there and there is perceived to be a medical emergency, the inmate should be taken to the hospital. Additionally, Your Honor, I would note that from a conditions of confinement standpoint, although the standards are the same, below conditions of confinement was never pled and was not brought up before the district court. Additionally, Your Honor, I'd like to note that the Henson case, which was relied upon by plaintiffs in this case, it happened after this. But the panel in Henson, Your Honor, and Judge Dennis was a dissenting vote on that panel, but the panel in the Henson case, Your Honor, specifically found that there was no underlying constitutional violation in that case.
That was against the sheriff?
Yes, Your Honor, against the sheriff in the jail and one of the nurses. So against the staff who was there at the time, Your Honor. And with no underlying constitutional violation, of course, my clients, the sheriff and the county, could not be liable. So, Your Honor, the Henson case in this particular circumstance doesn't apply because it happened after this occurred. It was totally unrelated, and the court found there was no constitutional violation. The other case that the plaintiff relies on is Bowden. That was a case that was settled for a relatively small amount of money, and there was no finding of a constitutional violation in that case either. And it's a totally unrelated situation. Your Honor, I would just note that in either deliberate indifference or under a conditional case, the condition must be an extended or pervasive pattern of serious deficiencies or pervasive conduct by jail officials to prove an intended condition or practice. And those things have to occur prior to the case that they're alleging for the county to be responsible. There are absolutely no previous incidents noted in Dr. Boland's 10-year history or Nurse Kravitz's 10-year history, Your Honor. I'll be happy to field any questions that the court might have if I can help in any way.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Davis.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Okay, back to you, Mr. Riddle.
Your Honors, one of the things that we heard quite a bit there was that the system worked well up until Jason Brown. Dr. Boland had worked there for 9 years without similar incident. We didn't go through the facts of this case because I didn't have time. But I don't believe that anybody in their right mind believed that the care that Jason Brown got on the evening that he died or for the 55 hours that he suffered was good. And what's really telling is at the end of the report that was written, to where all the facts that are in the appellant's brief come from the Wichita County folks themselves. But at the end of that report, after you read about all the blood, about Finnegan suppositories being given and antacids being given, there is the end of it to where they conclude. And Sheriff Callahan signed off on it, and Lieutenant David Duke, the investigating officer, said this: Jason Brown was provided appropriate medical care in accordance with the existing policies and procedures. All they want to talk about is nothing else happened at this facility. Well, we don't know that. Because for some reason, Jason Brown's death, which I don't believe anybody could ever say, wasn't horrific. They concluded nothing happened. Everything was done right in accordance with the existing policies and procedures. Jason Brown is dead, and he suffered with his death. I've heard many things brought up in this case today and in this briefing. The occupational code, which has never been raised, and these affidavits from the appellant's experts saying this is all against the law. You cannot be doing this. This is aside from the intimidation. We have had experts for 3 years saying this is against the law. You can't do it. And only now we're hearing it, but there's no evidence of it. They've never hired one expert to come in and say this is okay in the occupation code. And I don't believe that.
Well, you raised that in your opening argument today, contending that it was a violation of the code to delegate.
And it is, Your Honor.
Well, but don't complain that they brought it up. I mean, I asked the question, and counsel was well prepared and had a good answer.
Your Honor, he also said administer. Administering medications is not prescribing medications. Those standing orders that he referred to, those are standing orders that are there with a doctor present, and there are medications being given because the doctor has to give those. Or you have to be even past an RN level. You can be a nurse practitioner and actually administer those. One of the other things that counsel for Dr. Boland said, being a jerk is not unconstitutional, but he wasn't aware of any of these problems. He's the instigator. Sheriff Callahan may have had the argument, I didn't know it was this bad or didn't know, but Dr. Boland is a medical doctor. He should know that he should not have a standing order to where these LVNs are acting as on-call nurses, prescribing medication, assessing patients. And that's the other thing. Counsel for Dr. Boland said, Nurse Kratchka made an assessment that he was in good health. My 7-year-old daughter would not have said Jason Brown was in good health. There was a pattern and practice out there, too, that when someone complained of throwing up blood, that was Kool-Aid. And then you got put on no Kool-Aid watch. And that's what happened to Chelsea Bowden, the young lady that we were talking about who settled for a nominal amount even though she lost a large portion of her colon, because they let her sit for a month, and she goes to a new facility where they have a nurse practitioner who actually can do some of these assessments and diagnosis. And she goes there, and they figure out, gosh, we got to get this girl to surgery. But she sat there for a month. And the point of the matter is, whether you believe in the intimidation or whether you think there's evidence there, there is evidence of one thing, a policy put into place by Dr. Bowen to where he had these nurses, LVNs, bedpan orderlies, prescribing medication and assessing and acting as non-call nurses. I'm going to be brief here, but the medical services plan that was discussed, and it's the holy grail of this for the county, Dr. Bowen testified he didn't even know it existed. The head nurse said, I didn't know it existed. I'd never seen it. There's testimony in the record. So that never comes into play because no one knows about it. And if you look at the case of Grandstaff, you can look at post-incident behavior to show conscious indifference. Thank you, Your Honors.
All right. Thank you, gentlemen. We have your case. That completes the docket for today, and we'll be in recess until 1 o'clock tomorrow.